Good afternoon to everyone.
Rebellious
students and rebellious international scientists. It's a great pleasure to be able to share some ideas with you and participate in thinking about new worlds. I finished my doctorate a year ago, and since then I left the academic world for many reasons. I'm supporting a self-managed social center called Utopia, and perhaps I'll learn more there than the university. I want to share some things I've learned in the university while I remember them, and I hope that it'll be interesting. We're here to speak of a wall. I think this wall is not just in front of us, but also is around us. The wall compresses us and oppresses us. And it's maintained thanks to the body, our bodies, our work, and thanks to our purchases. It can't exist without our work, without our purchases. So the jail depends on us. So we can debilitate it just by leaving it, this jail, through the small cracks that already exist. What are these cracks? This jail depends on us, but we also depend on the jail. We don't know how to live without capitalism, right? So in my opinion, the cracks are the projects of autonomy that emancipate us from the jail. There are autonomous communities all over the world, and of course here in Chiapas, communities that have left the capitalist jail that live and organize with several different methods, but without a capitalist logic. Now we have to broaden these cracks that not over the rich, but rather through other worlds that we can build without walls. And we have to look toward other peoples and see if their worlds are better than the capitalist jail. So increasingly more people can emancipate themselves and build other worlds. When there are very few people left in the jail, the walls will fall. The problem is the wall, the jail, is also within us, in our heads. There are not many people that leave the jail because the capitalist culture is everywhere, through all our minds. This culture reduces our imagination and it makes us think that there are no alternatives. To broaden the cracks so more people can be emancipated, we have to counter-arrest the capitalist culture that colonizes our minds. The culture that says that private property is the only guarantee of survival, that we can't count on the support of other individuals, that we have to push down the other people, that we're in a global competition. I want to give a few counterarguments to this culture that we can use to convince the people that we can organize ourselves and attain better life than what capitalism has for us. First, I want to remember the connection between capitalism and competition, because the idea of competition is, why is this idea of competition so important for capitalists? It seems like the wealthy aren't so hurried to, urgent to compete with each other. Capitalism was born with European bourgeoisie. They began to lend money to the conquerors who began to conquer the island of the turtle and amassing fortunes. And then they began this triangular commerce with slaves. That's how capitalism began. So capitalism always depended on the exploitation of millions of people. First, slaves in the colonies, and then workers in the European factories. In this time, we see robbery of human labor that is so great that it had no precedent. And in England, robbery of the common lands began, and these became private property. This despoilment was pushed down with the Mexican Constitution. They accumulated by despoilment and made unjust use of natural and social resources. Capitalists had to justify this organization, which was unfair. To justify robbery of labor, they said that labor is good, working is good for the mind and the body, that those who don't work are lazy, and that those who work more will be richer. And the ones that are richer work really hard, and those are the best people. And to justify the robbery of the commons and the importance of private property, they invented the individual who is independent and alone. In this way, they made us think that everyone needs to fight against everybody. But fortunately, there was Darwin and his evolution of the species. They understood very well what they could do with his theory. They created social Darwinism. They said that everybody is in competition with everybody. This is mental terrorism. Make people be afraid so they work and work without questioning. So those who created social Darwinism wrote long theses explaining scientifically why white people are better, and they designed eugenics, using nice words to justify sterilization of many criminals and homosexuals. When I was in school, I was told that social Darwinism doesn't exist, but I think that social Darwinism is still very present in the capitalist system. Social Darwinism is still dominant, saying that competition is the motor of progress and the market and the motor of society, and poor people are poor because they don't work enough, they don't understand anything, they don't do things well. And they're so dumb and lazy, they can't earn money. This social Darwinism, the culture of this is one of the reasons why most people don't mobilize themselves, because they think competition is the normal reality of human beings and all nature. And they're afraid to lose in the competition. There are many lies that capitalism says, and we have to destroy them to broaden the cracks in the minds. Now that I've worked in competition of species, I'm going to try to work to destroy these social Darwinism ideas. Social Darwinism is based on false ideas of the species and natural selection, and I want to clarify them. It's said that individuals are competition to survive, that the individuals are selected, those who survive better. These are the strongest. And they, through progress of evolution, to better state of organisms. This is a very poor understanding of evolution. Reality, selection doesn't occur on the level of the individuals, but rather on the level of the genes. The genes are what evolve, each one independently of others and the environment. They are the metaphors, they are the tool of the genes to reproduce themselves. This is the second point. Duplication is the fundamental process of life, a chain of DNA that turns into two chains, two copies, which are almost exactly the same. They don't need to survive. They just need to copy themselves. Some organisms have very short life, but it doesn't matter because they reproduce very quickly. They're not living beings. They're just forms that make an effort to copy themselves. Organic life appeared 4,000,000 years as molecules that by chance were created and could create other copies of themselves. The molecules associated with each other to duplicate themselves. And this was a progressive improvement of self-catalysis. Existing in the future, you can observe that if life didn't replicate, it wouldn't exist. If it replicates, you'll see it in the future, and if it doesn't, then it'll disappear. These forms happen in genes, but it's the same thing. Third, something else that improves with evolution is the capacity of genes to duplicate in organic and inorganic environment. This happened through several paths over the years, and now many living organisms are more than their genes. But they're just trying to reproduce their genes. We can't say that an organism today is better than the organism yesterday. That doesn't make sense because they don't have the same environment. We can't compare them. And the capacity to reproduce themselves doesn't say anything about the physical force or the sensitivity or intelligence or resilience of an organism. It's also thought that organisms are in competition for access to resources. This is a strange way to present reality. This implies a permanent war among organisms to over limited resources and that some will die. But reality is that the rate of reproduction of organisms depends on the amount of resources. If there's less resources, individuals become weaker and reproduce less and the population goes down. And when there are new life forms that manage to access more resources, they reproduce more and their populations increase. But this is very slow. We have to understand that evolution is not a long series of substitution of one species from another. An elephant did not substitute the mammoth. The modern elephant didn't bring the mammoth to extinction. Rather, what was before mammoths are now elephants because they've changed because the environment has changed. They evolved to continue to evolve, and now they're producing what we now called elephants. It's very uncommon that one species leads another one to extinction. It's more common that species mix and give rise to hybrids. Hybridization is very important in evolution because it creates a mix of genes, new combinations of genes that have not been tested by natural selection. Sometimes the mix is not good and don't survive the environment. But occasionally, they're better adapted to the environment. For example, bacteria often integrate genes from other species of bacteria, and this is a very important process in evolution of bacteria and evolution against antibiotics. Another example, modern wheat, hybrid wheat. They're a mix of wild wheat with two species of something. Humans created the wheat by seeking characteristics that didn't exist in nature. Interestingly, human beings are the result of hybridizations. It's estimated that 1 to 4% of the Euro-Asian genome comes from the Neanderthal, and 4 to 6% of the Melanesians come from the some other form. Symbiosis, when organisms acquire cooperation that's very so strong that they become one. There's many examples of symbiosis in nature. For example, as someone explained in the morning, a lichen is a result of symbiosis. Also, green manures, legumes, beans, and the rhizomatic bacteria. I won't dwell on these examples because they've already been talked about. Sometimes symbiosis happens with macroorganisms. For example, there are ants with a tree that protects them, and the ants protect the tree with their venom from other insects that want to eat them. We are a result of important symbiosis. The bacteria in on our skin, in our intestines, these are more numerous than our cells, and these protect us against bad bacteria in exchange for food. The eukaryotic cells, like in plants and animals, are also the result of symbiosis. A million and a half years ago, bacteria associated and fused to produce eukaryotes in exchange for energy from the others, and they became the first eukaryotic cell. This is how life became more complicated and had new properties. So the combination of new life forms can be very fertile. Life tries more to mix rather than destroy or substitute. Reproduction is more important than competition. And sexual reproduction that mixes the genes of mom and dad and creates new things is more common that they produce different things than something that's identical. The asexual reproduction has many advantages for genes. It's quick, cheap, efficient, that reproduces a child that's identical. In sexual reproduction, each gene only has 50% of probability of transmitting itself to be copied in the genome of the child. But as the genomes mix, then this leads to more genetic diversity to adapt to new environments. Asexuals reproduced quickly, but die quickly when the environment changes. They're efficient in the short term, but they disappear very quickly. Evolution shows us that diversity, mixing, is more resilient than uniformization, which is competitive. To describe evolution, we don't need to invoke competition. Evolution is not a constant struggle to improve and survive, but it's changes in diversity. Nature is a dynamic equilibrium among different life forms. The natural world is a world where many worlds fit. We see with hybridization and symbiosis that organisms of several species are not competitive, and their frequent mixing creates new life forms. Also within the species, individuals are not always competitive. Of course, we can see deer fighting over reproductive resources, the consent of the females, or groups of ants, lobsters, other things that kill each other for food. But these cases are not so common. We can find at least as many cases where individuals support each other. The simplest cases are the banks of fish or antelopes. The benefit is to hide from predators. Of course, some individuals will be devoured, but each individual has a very small probability of being the victim of the day, and the large majority can escape while the predator eats. So we see defense is better in group. For example, groups of penguins share heat to resist the cold. Defense also means vigilance. We can see birds that watch over taking turns while others eat. Defense against predators, against cold, and also against illnesses. Chimpanzees spend a lot of time picking out fleas from each other, or lice. And there are also these kind of strategies among plants. For example, in Africa, some plants emit chemicals when their leaves are eaten, acacias. And this chemical alerts other acacias that there are predators, and the other acacias will produce a substance that the antelopes don't like. Another case is some bacteria biofilms, which facilitate cells to collaborate. These cells, the films, give resistance to the cells against any kind of aggressor. These are example of superstructures. The social ants, they're so small that they couldn't build anything by themselves. So they build like spider webs, but they have to do it together. Another example of common superstructures are beavers. The beaver dam gives them protection and food in summer and protection against climate and predators and to have better access to resources. For example, lions, wolves hunt in group. And the best example is ants, which are incredible organisms because there are many of them, and they have different specializations and good organization. So they're very efficient in gathering many resources, so much that they can create evolutionary strange things. Individuals that aren't workers or queens, they're intermediaries, intercastes. Although they're not useful, they're not a hindrance to the colony. And sometimes these individuals have characteristics which allow them to improve the function of the colony in some way. Like, this is how soldiers and workers appeared in among ants. We see that cooperation, altruism, mutual support has many benefits: protection, better obtention of resources, production of beneficial superstructures. For these reasons, human beings have evolved like a social being living in small groups. This is our principal strength because we have to communicate amongst each other. And this evolution, from this evolution, we found the need to communicate abstract things through our language and our thoughts. This is the unique trait of human beings. It wasn't competition that resulted in this communication, but rather mutual support, exchange. And this, for many people, for modern society, seems terrible. Our happiness, our life, does not just depend on ourselves, but also on others. This is a truth that capitalism rejects, because capitalism wants to believe and make us believe that individuals are the only masters of their life. And people that live in modern society are afraid of this truth, to accept a dependence of others seems like jumping into a black hole. But our life depends almost entirely on other people. We can have projects for the future, but tomorrow a maniac could kill us and we couldn't do anything to prevent it. If we forget about or hide our interdependence, that's stupid. Our interdependence is not bad, it's good. It's not a weakness, it's our strength. Because as nature shows, the most significant interdependence, mutual support, is enriching. This is the message that we should bring everywhere to the world, that we're not solitary individuals, that we never were and never will be. And this is our strength. This is perhaps the only opportunity that we have to confront the storm that already began. The wall knows that a big group can destroy it, but it knows that solitary individuals cannot. So the wall tries to build walls in our minds that separate us, that isolate us, that say your brother, your sister is an enemy. There's not place for everybody. You have to fight, compete with the others, and be stronger. And if not, you will die from indigence. No one will support you. And unfortunately, the little walls have been built in many minds, and many minds believe it and ears hear it. The first thing we have to do is build other worlds, cultural, political alternatives of production that are the cracks in the walls, because they offer paths to leave the wall. And this exists here in Chiapas and in many other places. We know how to organize without a logic of jail. We've created many new cultures, but this is not enough, because many people don't realize that the cracks already exist. And this is because the cracks are small and dispersed. And so we have to shout, we have to point out, look, these are the cracks. Look, you want to see the crack in this wall. Come here. Let's talk. I'll explain. We have to analyze the wall and understand its weaknesses and explain how we can create more cracks. Have to pull people's ears. Look, I found a combination of rocks, a way we can work so we can build another crack. We have to build something against the culture of competition and disinformation of those above. We have to self-manage our own schools, cultural centers, cultural events, radio, magazines, and other ways to speak to people, show that it is possible and that we can create tools to build cracks toward other worlds. To finish, I want to say thank you very much to those who have organized this encounter. Thank you for listening. Health to you, and we will see each other in another crack.